Well, your dadgum government, you saw it sewing souls. You got your damn hands in every pocket of my clothes. Well, your dadgum, dadgum, dadgum government. Oh, don't you know? Oh, don't you love them sometimes? Well, your dadgum government, you better pay attention. You're setting up there like a fool's convention. Do you get gum, get gum, get gum government? Uh-huh. Oh, don't you know? Oh, don't you love them sometimes? Uh-huh. Well, you soul-selling, no-good sons of a shoe-fitting fire starters. Ought to tell you no good preambulatory bone frame and nail it to your government walls. All of you, you dadgum government, you sorry ratchet ratchets.
You got yourself you sorry ratchet ratchets, you will. Well, Roger Miller probably did that better than anyone else describing the United States government. May Roger rest in peace. Welcome, everyone, to the Rebel Madman radio program here on Republic Broadcasting Network. And you can find Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcastingnetwork.org. Not to be redundant or anything. And folks, before we jump into today's program, I would sincerely hope that you would go to republicbroadcastingnetwork.org. And if you can at all possibly do so, please donate to keep this bastion of free speech alive and well, because it's rapidly going away, folks, I promise you. The ability to say anything which contradicts what government believes or what government puts out is rapidly going away. We are seeing that in so many different ways. So if you have the opportunity, step up. Support free speech with Republic Broadcasting. That being said, the subject for today's program is none other than black-on-white crime and how that is being suppressed across this country. And we're beginning to see more and more and more of it. The one thing that I can tell you is this, that if you go to, you know, your common everyday search engine and type in black on white crime, you will find that you will get page after page after page of government statistics, in essence telling you that it doesn't exist in any appreciable form. Well, the fact that the government denies it should be all that you need to know that it is, in fact, true. Now, unfortunately, this subject lost a great researcher and a great author, Colin Flaherty, a couple of years ago, I think it was. But he did such great work on this. And I would highly recommend for each and every one of you who have an interest in this subject to purchase Colin's book, and it's called White Girl Bleed a Lot. And he documents throughout that. And there are a couple of websites that will also document even one on a monthly basis of the black-on-white crime that goes unreported in this country. Why is the media staying away from it? Well, the media is staying away from it because it's a government psyop. And they certainly don't want their psyop revealed for what it is. And this government is intent on promoting a racial war in this country. They have been at it for years. And we look at the things that are happening. You know, the papers just won't report it. Colin Flaherty goes into great detail about the city of Philadelphia and Wilmington, Delaware, and other places where these crimes are epidemic in proportion to others, but yet the media does not mention it. Or if the media mentions it, it does not mention the race Now, I promise you, if it happens in reverse, you're going to hear all of the hate crime, and that is part of the PSYOP. People just can't seem to wrap their heads around this. But there are, some, we look at, 2021, murder rates by sex and race per 100,000 population. Assuming that those rates hold through the years, 0.274% of white males will commit murder. And yet, 4.508% of black males will commit murder, while 0.174% of Hispanic females will commit murder during their lifetimes. And, need we say more than, and yes, folks, yes, there is black-on-black crime. That is epidemic proportions as well. All you got to do is to go to any inner city and look at the crime statistics, and I promise you, they are appalling. So, why is this being covered up? Why is the race of those who are committing crimes not mentioned? So, again, who controls the media? But let's be fair, and let's start out with black-on-black crime primarily. Let's look into the city of Chicago. And let's understand here that in Chicago, they're not even in the top 10 of violent crimes. But per capita, they are way up there. Well, let's just look at January to date in the city of Chicago. 38 have been shot and killed. 150 have been shot and wounded. Total shot, 188. Total homicides, 41. So 38 out of 41 were by being shot. Well, let's look at the week in progress. And let's think about this. All right, shot and killed in this week in Chicago, 8. Shot and wounded, 29. Total people shot in Chicago this week, 37. Total homicides, 9. Now, here's the really scary part. Let's look at the past 10 years in Chicago alone. Shot and killed, 5,750 people in the city of Chicago. Shot and wounded, 27,802. Total shot, 33,552. Total homicides in Chicago for the 10-year period, 6,468. Now, Chicago has some of the toughest gun control laws on the books. And yet, we see 27,802 people shot in 10 years. Does gun control work? Obviously not. So, this crime, what is the origin of the crime? Why are we seeing these crimes committed? That has to be a most interesting question. That's got to be something that we have to look at. And again, as I said before, I'm about an hour and a half south of Atlanta. And I'm about to tell you, folks, Atlanta's about to explode. You're probably not going to read about it on the news or anything else, but just don't be dumb enough to travel in Chicago after dark. You're taking a big risk traveling there during the daytime, but don't travel there after dark. Now, recently there was a shooting in Chicago. The city of Atlanta had decided to build a new law enforcement training center. Well, after George Floyd, you can imagine how that went over in Chicago. I mean, in Atlanta. Gosh, I'll get them straight here in a minute. So Atlanta is building this new training facility, which makes no sense whatsoever because there are all kind of empty strip malls and buildings and everything in Atlanta. Why didn't they just repurpose one of those buildings? But they had to build a new one. They had to make a big deal out of it. And I think that was intentional. And so then what happens? Well, you've got blacks who are surrounding that area, and they are actually even making tree houses where they're staying, and they are putting up all kind of protests against any new training facility for the cops in Atlanta. So then we have a shooting recently. Now, the police claim, and they're as unreliable as any other source, I promise you, and I could provide thousands of instances to prove that. But anyway, they claim that they were opened fire. Someone opened fire on them when they were there, and so they were called there for a disturbance. So they fire back, and they kill a black man. And then recently, within the past week or so, the newspapers report that there were 8 people who came into Atlanta with explosives and other devices, and they were apprehended. Now, the Atlanta media will not tell you what color they were. They claim they were from outside of the state of Georgia, but they won't say where they were from. And they won't talk about the explosives that they had. So we are looking at a potential in many of the large cities. And as I said before, well, we had one recently in Memphis, too. And this one was 5 black police officers beat a black man to death. I really cannot understand that. What is this mass violence that seems to be ingrained into the American public? 5 black cops beat a black man to death. That was Memphis. I'm sorry. And so Memphis withheld that. Memphis shut down everything this past Friday night. Football games, everything. Basketball games, I'm sorry. Nothing was to take place in Memphis because they feared the riots until these body cam videos are released. Well, they've been released now. 5 Memphis cops have been charged with murder in the death of this 29-year-old black man. And yet they're still expecting riots, not only in Atlanta, but maybe, I mean, in Memphis, but maybe all around the country because of this. Well, now just stop and think what would have happened had those 5 cops been white. What would we have been dealing with? People, racial tension in this country is created by the government. It has been for such a long period of time. I mean, let's look at the 2 women, I almost called them ladies, the 2 women who started Black Lives Matter. In their introduction, they claimed that they were both Marxist and Marxist trained. And yet, corporations across this country donated millions of dollars to these 2 women. Why would a corporation be donating money to people who are proud of being Marxist and Marxist trained? Folks, we've got some very deep problems going on in this country. But the thing I ask you so many times is, why is a separation? Why is a clash of the black and white cultures? Why is that important to the government? And that is very simple. It's a shell game. Because if the blacks and the whites got together and realized that their real adversary in all of these events is the government. Well, that was revealed in Memphis. when five black government employees beat a black man to death. And I think it was Al Sharpton who said this week, oh my goodness, what a wonderful person to mention. But Al Sharpton, you know, who lied his butt off about a case a couple of decades back about some lady being raped, you know, some young person, and it proved to be false and all the other stuff. So, you know, we're to believe them now, right? So what is the purpose of this people? Why does the federal government, and especially in the media by covering it up, why are they promoting this violence? Well, one of the reasons I believe they're promoting violence is because if we look at this and look at the things that are happening, we are offering a great justification for the disarmament of America. That's number one, I believe. Number two is to keep the races at each other's throats, to build resentment. I mean, to have the people adversarial, both sides looking to government for answers, which empowers government. But this violence is absolutely off the charts, and we don't know about it. But if they can use it to disarm the public, a goal is achieved. And I believe that is one of the primary reasons they are pushing this. But, you know, we've had this for quite some time, as Colin Flaherty goes into detail on in his book, White Girl Bleed a Lot. But why are these crimes? I mean, I'm thinking about one that happened, I think, back in 2007. A beautiful young lady and her, I believe they were engaged, and her boyfriend were carjacked in Knoxville, Tennessee. Raped. She was raped in front of her boyfriend. She was sodomized in front of her boyfriend. And then they poured Drano down her throat to do away with any DNA. Killed her, killed him. And that ended up being one heck of a fiasco in Knoxville, Tennessee. Recently, we've seen an awful lot of murders in America, which are stabbings, too, of white women who are involved with black men. There was one recently in Lincolnton, North Carolina. And some of these savage murders, there was one in South Carolina not too long ago. But they go unreported. Why would the media, which is owned by the government, not be reporting and telling the truth about these incidents? Now, this kind of flies in the face for me, and it makes it a little hard for me to understand, is that they're promoting a race war. There's no doubt about that. They've been doing that for years. If you doubt that, I suggest you read Mr. Manning Johnson's book. And Manning Johnson was, in fact, a true hero. Manning Johnson was a brilliant black man who in the 1940s, I believe it was because of his great intelligence, was taken by the Marxists all the way to Russia to train him to come back to America and to create a division between the black and the white races, using the black churches as his planning grounds, to go into the black churches to create this hatred of the white people. Now, Manning Johnson saw through this eventually, and he wrote a wonderful book. And for any of you out there who would like a PDF copy of that book, contact me, please, at, Rebel Madman Radio. And I will get a PDF of that book to you. That book is just absolutely profound. And, you know, look at what's going on. You know, we go back to, you know, the George Floyd incident, which I believe was staged from the very beginning. And but look what happened with George Floyd's family. What, they end up with $36 million? Do you think there are people out there who would sacrifice someone in their family for $36 million? I certainly do. Especially in today's world. And so here we are. I'm trying to, pardon me while I'm looking here, but I am trying to find exactly that book so that we could make sure that anyone who would be interested gets it. And the title of Manning Johnson's book was Color, Communism, and Common Sense. Well, what were the table of contents? Number one was in the web. Number two was subverting Negro churches. Number three, red plot to use Negroes. Number four, the bane of red integration. Number, the next is destroying opposition. Next, the real Uncle Toms. The next chapter, creating hate. The next chapter, modern-day carpetbaggers. The next chapter, race pride is passé. The next chapter, wisdom needed. Then in the appendix is communist at Howard University. And then next was Manning Johnson's farewell address. Well, Manning Johnson was called to testify to the House Un-American Affairs Committee. And he made a speech and a presentation there, of which I have a copy. And that also I will be happy to get off to folks who are interested in the subject. But something rather remarkable happened. And that was that shortly after his presentation to the House Un-American Affairs Committee, Manning Johnson mysteriously dies. Well, let me read you something about the book. This explosive expose of the communist plan to use the Negro race to sow division, foment race wars, and ultimately bring about a socialist totalitarian state was written by an American Negro communist who defected from the Marxist Party when he realized its cynical exploitation of Negroes was destroying the social fabric of black communities and harming his own people. Manning Johnson, who died unexpectedly soon after his book was published and he appeared before the House Affairs, Un-American Affairs Committee, understood the risk of defecting from and denouncing communism. Therefore, he should be an American hero. And nothing about him being an American hero do I disagree with. The problem is that the majority of the people in this country know nothing about Manning Johnson. A man with integrity, the man with who stood up after he realized what was happening. In modern literature, anti-communists are generally pictured as scoundrels. On the other hand, left-wing perjurers and jailbirds are shown as persecuted lambs. But there is a special vitriol uncorked for those who have followed communism and have repented to such an extent that they are publicly willing to stand up and testify against it by word and deed. I'm reading from the preface here. The writer of this pamphlet, Manning Johnson, is an example of such treatment. The Supreme Court of the United States used a communist statement in a decision of the majority opinion as delivered by Justice Felix Frankfurter to brand Manning Johnson as giving tainted testimony and cited as a basis for this statement the Communist Party brief. Here's the Supreme Court siding with the Communist Party against Manning Johnson. The left-wing papers, including the New York Herald Tribune, joyfully took up the Supreme Court's position. Of course, careful investigation shows that Manning Johnson is not a perjurer, and it would be easy to prove this in any court not dominated by such a character as Felix Frankfurter or any other member of the U.S. Supreme Court. Johnson's story is intriguing, and I see that my good friend Murr has posted that in the chat room. Thank you, Murr. And Murr, if you do not have his testimony before the House Un-American Affairs Committee, I will get that to you hopefully here on break so that you can post that as well. Thank you very much. So here we have, going back 70 years, the unequivocal evidence that this country's government is promoting racial tension for its own benefit. Now, what a wonderful way should this racial tension get worse and worse and worse, and violence will be its product. What a wonderful way to call for martial law in this country. And who does that benefit? It's not going to benefit the people. It just gives the government more power. More and more and more power. And that is what they're seeking. That is what they desire. So, yes, we see a great deal here from this great book, Color, Communism, and Common Sense. What a wonderful man was Manning Johnson. But yet, again, I'd be redundant, but how many people have ever even heard of him? And how many people know that the U.S. Supreme Court, a U.S. Supreme Court justice, quoted Marxist dogma to criticize this man? And we really believe, for some unknown reason, that this government somehow is to be trusted in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And yes, black-on-black crime is terrible. Black-on-white crime is terrible. But all of this is leading us to a desired end by this government, which should tell you straight up, this government is not to be trusted in the hands of anyone. And again, the government controls the media. Operation Mockingbird. And let's not forget what the CIA director said. We will know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes. William Casey, 1982. And again, folks, it is imperative that we are careful with what we allow this government to continue to do. And while the majority of Americans are asleep, mentally, in many cases, most of them sitting on their backsides waiting for the Super Bowl. Well, we have a college football champion. Now, you know, the only thing that can be important to millions of people is who's going to win the Stupid Bowl. But we are ignoring the destruction of our country through violence. And as I said before, I read you the statistics from Chicago. They're not even in the top 10 for violence in this country. Memphis is right up there. Detroit is right up there. St. Louis is terrible. Birmingham is terrible. These crimes are being committed throughout this country, and they are going unreported. But who's behind it? Who profits? The old saying, qui bono. Well, let me, as we have a moment, read you an excerpt from Manning Johnson's book. And he says, 10 years I labored in the cause of communism. I was a decorated comrade. All my talents and efforts were zealously used to bring about the triumph of communism in America and throughout the world. To me, the end of capitalism would mark the beginning of an interminable period of plenty, peace, prosperity, and universal comradeship. All racial and class differences and conflicts would end forever after the liquidation of the capitalists, their government, and their supporters. A world union of Soviet states under the hegemony of Russia would free and lead mankind on to utopia. Being an idealist, I was sold this bill of goods by a Negro graduate of the Lenin Institute in Moscow. The color of one's skin is no bar to a young man or woman dreaming of making a better world. Like other Negroes, I experienced and saw many injustices and inequities around me based upon color, not ability. I was told that the decadent capitalist system is responsible, that mass pressure would force concessions, but that just prolongs the life of capitalism, that I must unite and work with all those who more or less agree that capitalism must go. Little did I realize until I was deeply enmeshed in the Red Conspiracy that just and seeming grievances are exploited to transform idealism into a cold and ruthless weapon against the capitalist system, that this is the end toward which all the communist efforts among Negroes are directed. Well, break time, folks. Thanks, Murr, for posting that testimony.
Tattered gray was torn between if we should run or fight, but our southern pride swelled up inside as we dug in for the night.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Alive, best be on our way. Our tattered gray was torn tweed, and we should run a fight. But our southern pride swelled up inside, so we dug in for the night. Then I heard a rider calling, they're coming down the road. And the fiery flash of 20 pounders started to explode. Tried our best to stop them, our efforts were in vain. In the distance, you could hear the sound of Dixie's last refrain.
Folks, they are not only just burning Georgia down with their Marxist regime and their Marxist practices, they are burning down America. And I think I would be remiss, and first of all, I should have said it in the beginning, I'd like to dedicate this program to the memory of Manning Johnson, a true American hero. I could give a damn what color his skin is. He's an American hero. And here is what I want to continue a little bit with what he had to say. Little did I realize until I was deeply enmeshed in the Red Conspiracy that just and seeming grievances are exploited to transform idealism into a cold and ruthless weapon against the capitalist system. That this is the end toward which all of the communist efforts are among Negroes are directed. Indeed, I had entered the Red Conspiracy in the vain belief that it was the way to a new, better, and superior world system of society. 10 years later, thoroughly disillusioned, I abandoned communism. The experiences of those years in outer darkness are like a horrible nightmare. I saw communism in all its naked cruelty, ruthlessness, and utter contempt of Christian attributes and passions. And two, I saw the low value placed upon human life, the total lack of respect for the dignity of man, the betrayal of trust, the terror of the secret police, and the bloody hand of the assassin during and since those fateful years when I embraced communism. I was lured into the Red Movement by way of the American Negro Labor Congress, one of the many front organizations set up by the communists to trap the naive, unwary, unsuspecting, and idealistic Negro. The use of such attractive and appealing fronts as a means of entrapment is a most important serpentine method of the Reds. After 2 years of practical training and organizing street demonstrations, inciting mob violence, how to fight the police, and how to politically throw a brick and hide, I was ready, in the opinion of my leaders, for a top communist school. At a secret national training school in New York City, that's revealing, I was given an extensive and intensive course in the theory and practice of Red political warfare. As a result, I was appointed district organizer by the Political Bureau of the Communist Party in Buffalo, New York, one of the vital industrial sections of the country. It was in the position of district organizer that I learned to use secret codes, mail drops, organize clandestine meetings, shake police shadows, and offer underground activities. At the same time, I became acquainted with the nature of communist sabotage and espionage. You folks think that our two BLM ladies went through the same training, perhaps? My zeal, training, both theoretical and practical, combined with loyalty and willingness to sacrifice, changed me from a novice into a dedicated Red, a professional revolutionist. Consequently, I climbed rapidly to the National Committee, the highest governing body of the Communist Party in America. Being a Negro top communist, I was placed on the National Negro Commission, an important subcommittee of the National Committee of the Communist Party. On this commission, which was created on direct orders from Moscow to facilitate the subversion of the Negroes, I began to realize the full implications of how the Negro is used as a political dupe by the Kremlin hierarchy. Under the guise of unity of black and white in the struggle, several top white communists, such as James S. Allen, Elizabeth Lawson, the late Robert Bob Minor, and George Blake Charney, were placed on the National Negro Commission. These white communists wielded more power than the nominal Negro heads of the commission. I think we'll find that same thing in the NAACP. In a word, they are like white overseers. Anyone wonder why there wasn't anyone white in a position of authority in the NAACP for over 30 years? Every Negro member was aware of the fact that these white overseers constituted the eyes, the ears, and the voice of the Kremlin. Moreover, these white overseers are the surest functional guarantee of the maintenance of the hierarchical authoritarian control of the Kremlin over their Negro lickspittles, directing the conspiracy among Negroes in America. Indeed, it is the white group on the National Negro Commission that holds full sway. They flatter one or two top Negroes by making them feel they are actually participating in the formulation of policy by consulting with them prior to meetings of the commission. Then these two Negroes are assigned to lay down the line to the other Negroes on the commission. The white members are there to make sure they do. Their opinion of what a Negro member says at a meeting can either make or break him. Usually the Negro who is broken is accused of petty bourgeois nationalism, that is, placing the interest of the Negro above the interest of the Communist Party. In this connection, I observed how white women communists are used as political prostitutes, cohabitating with high-level Negro communists in order to spy on them. Through such intimate relations, these white women communists are able to elicit information pertaining to family background, sources of income, marital difficulties, arrests, convictions, opinions on communist policy, and communist leadership. This information is invaluable to the Red hierarchy in their relations with their Negro lickspittles. In top Red circles, this is known as bedroom politics. White communist women are also used to maneuver top Negro Reds into compromising positions that, if revealed, would result in public scandal or disgrace. In this way, the Reds make these Negroes permanently subject to blackmail if they ever consider leaving the Red movement. Moreover, this information is used to destroy the credibility of the defector should he decide to fight the Red conspiracy. The highest position I attained was candidate for the Political Bureau, the Politburo, of the Communist Party. The Politburo is a small, close-knit body carefully selected by the Kremlin hierarchy. Each member holds this position solely on the approval of the reactionary, rapacious despoilers in the Kremlin. This is the real governing body of the entire Red Conspiracy in America. A candidate is invited to sit in on deliberations with voice, but no vote. No vote. Usually a representative of the Kremlin participates in all meetings and deliberations of the Politburo. This writer sat in such meetings when Gerhard Eisler, alias Edwards, Brown, Hans Berger, etc., was the Kremlin representative. Eisler later jumped bail and fled the United States on the Red Polish liner Battery after he was exposed and convicted of passport fraud. The assignment of political commissars to the Red Movement in America is not limited solely to America, but is an established Kremlin policy in relation to all communist parties in countries outside of the Iron Curtain. Communist agents such as Eisler exercise an awesome power over the white as well as the black lickspittles, comprising the leadership. When Eisler spoke, one could hear a pin fall. Each leader sat in rapt attention, hanging on to every word Eisler uttered as if it were indeed a pronouncement from the Holy of Holies. On several occasions, he expressed the grave dissatisfaction of the Kremlin because of the failure of the party to take advantage of the broad People's Front movement to build progressive groups in participating organizations such as the NAACP, youth, religious, fraternal, labor, etc. These progressive groups, he said, was the only guarantee that the decisions we make with leaders will be brought down to and carried out by the membership. Folks, I don't know how much more you need to know, but it is my position, and I believe this to be true, that these black people who are selected to promote hatred throughout this country, BLM is a prime example, are no longer taken to the Soviet Union, because our government is as Marxist as the Kremlin ever was. This government is so far to the left socialist, and it's not because of one particular party. Both have participated. Both are still participating. Our government is completely and totally Marxist. And we are seeing the results of the works that Manning Johnson illustrates in his book. We are in serious trouble in this country, people. And if you don't take the opportunity to stifle this government at every turn, voting? Really? You believe voting is going to change something? Did it change anything in 2016? Did it change anything in 2020? Did it change anything in 2022? You know, I brought up this the other day. You know, I remember 2020 when, the Republicans were going crazy over election fraud. But the thing I thought of was the year 2000, when the United States Supreme Court ordered the state of Florida to stop counting votes so that George W. Bush would be elected president. Where was the outcry from the Republicans of this is not right? This is election fraud. Let me promise you, the winner never complains of election fraud. We had election fraud in 1960, perpetrated in Chicago by the Daleys and in Texas by Lyndon Johnson. Richard Nixon chose not to fight it. 8 years later, he's president. They get rewarded if they go along to get along. That's the name of the game. FDR, at the top of his administration, had over 230 communist agents in his administration. What makes you think that anything has really changed? What makes you think that we're not socialist? Completely and totally socialist. The programs voted on by this government, whether it be Republican or Democrat, are socialist in nature. It makes no difference who you put on the ship of Marxism by voting. The ship is still Marxist, and it will not change. If you think you elect a good person to this government and they might in some way change it, no, I promise you the reverse is true. They will either change that person to their way of thinking, or they will cease to support them for re-election. I've got a very good friend up in Northwest Arkansas. And his question recently when in a discussion was that one of their representatives, a staunch Republican, had voted for gun control. And they didn't need his vote to win. And my friend Mike says, why did he vote for gun control if they didn't need his vote? He has campaigned on Republican principles ever since he's been a member of Congress. And folks, I'm talking about Dennis Womack. Why do you think these people vote the way they vote? It's because they're told how to vote if they wish to succeed. If they wish to stay there, if they wish to stay in this government, they will do what they're told. They don't care about you. The only thing that matters is a vote, and that doesn't matter anymore because they can rig it electronically to be whatever they want it to be. How long is it going to take for you people to truly understand what we're dealing with here? I totally do not understand. I don't understand why this is such a tough thing. Are we just going by rote? Do we just rush to the polls and vote because it's the thing to do and everybody's done that before us? What was it Mark Twain said? If voting changed anything, they would make it illegal. Ha! Oh, well, boy, that's true. That is absolutely true. And I think it was Lysander Spooner who said, you are no less a slave because you get to pick a master every set number of years. People, this government, not to be redundant, but to reemphasize a point, this government is as rotten and Marxist and corrupt as the Kremlin ever was. It's just different people. And you think if you pick somebody good and put them in the communist boat, that they're going to change all of those people? Dream on, broomstick cowboy. It ain't going to happen. Well, I also want to take again the opportunity, people, that if you want the opportunity to have free speech, step up there and promote RBN. Go hit the donate button, whatever you can afford. If it's monthly, fine. If it's a one-time donation, whatever it is. But if you want to continue to hear free speech, you're going to have to step up and support it in one place or another. So, well, next week,
used to be Andy and Barney Fife, now a tired Stern and a brothel life, too much crap drive the world insane. Everybody singing the jailhouse blues, don't believe a word of the evening news. took and stood for years down the drain. Trailer parks with the building cold, cul-de-sacs on the country road. High-tech bars with bad karaoke sounds. Uncle Sam keeps your money spent. Pay your tithes, you can't pay your rent. Foreign car selling big in American town. What happened? Has anybody? Andy and Barney Fife, now a tired stern and a brothel life.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Well, folks, look like we had a few technical difficulties there. Hopefully we're on the other side of that. We've got just a short period of time left, and just wanted to kind of give you folks a heads up about next week and to let you know that Rebel Madman will be 2 hours beginning on the 4th. And my first program I have set in motion, and I will have my good friend DW on with me and my friend Cal and Dave Scorpio. And we are going to answer a question for the American public. Is America still an English colony? And have we ever not been? It's going to be interesting. I hope that you will join us as we go into it. And then to move on to, February the 11th, I have League of the South member Mark Tomey, who will be on with me. And we're going to discuss some Southern issues and some, especially from a speech that he gave at a League of the South meeting in Florida not too long ago. So, again, I hope you folks will be able to join us on that those two occasions, and I really look forward to moving to 2 hours. And again, folks, if there's any way possible, please support good old Republic Broadcasting Network.org. Until next week, God bless you all.
Away, away, away down south in Dixie. truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.